The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Uh-oh. They're seeping. Here. Look at this.
Oh! Shit! Ah, it hurt like shit.
Oh. I know. That's why I distracted you first. Same principle as deflowering virgins.
What?
I read it in this Harold Robbins book. Guy bites her on the ear, distracts from the pain. Ever try that?
No, I sock him in the jaw and your pop goes the weasel. Who the fuck are you?
We're That Horse Show Podcast. Merry Christmas.
Well,
hey, horror fans, welcome to the show. We are Tim and Chris, and it's December, so that must mean it's our Christmas holiday episode. Welcome to episode 34, that Netflix Christmas episode, A Red Christmas in Australia. Well, it's that time of year again, kiddies. Have you all been good little girls and good little boys? Well, if you haven't, you won't only get coal in your stocking, you may also get a visit from Saint Nick's little evil brother. Yeah, that punk-ass bitch Krampus. And let me tell you something, guys. That dude is one nasty mofo. So, guys, be good for goodness sakes. Christopher, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. And it's interesting you mentioned Krampus because a couple days ago I was thinking about the movie that we had reviewed that one time, the one that came out in theaters.
Memories.
You know, yeah, memories. and I was thinking of those little gingerbread characters. How those things were so funny. They should have a movie of their own. And so it's. But things are going well here. I've got the Christmas tree up. The presents are underneath it, all wrapped and ready to be open on Christmas Day, and can't wait for Christmas Day dinner. You know, it's the turkey, and the one thing I will be truly happy for when Christmas is over is that we can finally throw that little nasty elf on the shelf in the garbage can and just leave it be.
Yeah. Well, once you have kids, yeah, you may change your tune with the elf on the shelf.
Yeah, maybe, but but besides that, my Christmas shopping is done. I just await for this season to come and go and prepare myself for next year, and hopefully, you know, like New Year's resolutions, hopefully the next year will be better than the previous. So,
but, always.
Yeah, but not much exciting going on the horizon. I will say what I am excited for, and I hopefully it'll arrive at my doorstep because I did place the order for it. The Warner Archive has finally put out my favorite horror movie, Horror of Dracula, on Blu-ray from 1958, featuring the great Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, supposedly restored, so I can't wait to see it. And they're putting out one of my favorite. I'm using this quote from somebody else. I forget who they are. One of the greatest no-bullshit action movies ever made in 1968, Dark of the Sun, featuring Rod Taylor and Jim Brown. These are two movies I'm looking forward to. Hopefully they'll be in the mail soon. Place my order through Warner Archive, and I await for them to show up. Because, I mean, I've seen these two movies. They're my favorites. And to see them on nice HD quality Blu-ray is just, you know, something I'm excited for. But, I mean, that's, so far, no big snow has arrived, so I don't have to worry about snow several in the driveway anytime soon. Although, you know, that may change.
it's still pretty cold out there, though, right? I mean, you just
Oh, absolutely. I mean, didn't you guys get, you guys got snow out there, right, already?
We've got some snow, and it's about 8 or 9 degrees out there right now. It feels like 8 or 9 degrees. It's really about 20 degrees. Our lakes are frozen. Been frozen for, you know, about a couple of weeks now, and people are starting to ice fish. Now, I know when I used to live in Chicago, it used to take forever for our lakes and ponds to freeze over where you could actually go on the ponds. So I don't know. It must be something in the water up here that people are going out there, you know, a week after, you know, freeze and, you know, being able to skate and ice fish on the lakes.
Yeah. So. Well, who knows, you know? But, I mean, and your kids get to – did you take your kids outside and, like, you know, throw some snowballs and everything at each other? And
not yet. You know, it's there's snow on the ground, but it's pretty much – it's a lot – it's frozen, so it's not a real good packing snow right now.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, I won't be able to, unfortunately, won't be able to do a whole lot of, winter activities like I did last year. You know, I don't know if you listened to, our Saw franchise episode, I hurt my foot and yeah. It turns out I tore my Achilles tendon and my, or a partial tear of my right Achilles tendon. And yeah, I've got to wear a big old boot, walking boot for the next month. And thankfully I don't need surgery and we hope to, you know, just some physical therapy starting in January.
Oh, good, good. Well, you know, and we were talking about snow for a moment ago. Do you remember, and I think you were up here when it happened. It was like 3 years ago or 4 years ago. It was like that big snowstorm we got. Do you remember? I mean, I don't know if you ever remember it, but it was like really, it was like just this, it was like, I forget how many inches it was, but it was quite a bit. It was a lot.
Oh, are you talking about the thunder blizzard from 2010?
Oh, yeah. That one.
That's
that
like
one.
8 years ago.
Oh,
that's
okay. It was 8 years ago. It was eight. Well, it felt like four, but I mean, that's how ingrained that is in my mind. So.
Yeah. I remember the thunder blizzard of 2010.
That God. It was huge. And it took like hours just to get that driveway through. And you had walls of snow, man. You could barely see over the sides. So.
I remember that because we had just purchased our house, but we were still living in our apartment for a few months, and it was in December, and I was still working at Canon in Schaumburg. And I know you get for people who don't live in the Chicagoland area, you know, Schaumburg is roughly about 25 minutes from Bolingbrook into Naperville area.
Yeah,
and it took me 2 hours to go 30 miles. And that was the night before. It took me – no, I'm sorry. It took me 2.5 hours because our boss at the time, she was a real piece of work. She – the entire building, it was like 15 floors. The entire building was gone home. We were the only ones still left in the building. Everybody left let people go home earlier around like before lunch. She's like, okay, you guys can leave early at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, well, by that time the roads are so shitty. I'm watching the as I'm looking out our window over the expressway. I'm like, there is no way we're gonna get home. It took me 2.5 hours to get home. It was like 7 o'clock before I finally got home. Probably more than that. It was awful.
See, and man, even though I guess I'm a glutton for punishment for staying out here, but I always end up saying to myself, I need to move somewhere where there really is a warmer climate. I always end up staying out here anyways, just because.
California, Arizona, man.
Yeah, or Florida. But, you know, Florida can get pretty, from what I've been told, pretty humid out there. But But besides that, not much going on out here on my end. And I'm sure you've got far more interesting things going on than I do over here.
Well, I'm glad your Christmas preparations are going well, going smoothly. Same here. You know, finished pretty much all the Christmas shopping for all of our family and friends, and you know, all the kids are taken care of. Now it's just a matter of we got a big box in storage, you know, put away where the kids can't see it, and it's just a matter of finding time to wrap everything.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, we're just preparing for this show, watching, you know, Christmas themed movies and television show episodes and, you know, listening to Christmas music, getting into the whole spirit. We've got the Christmas tree up. I actually got my father's old train set under my tree, and it's one of these really old, nice ones. I mean, like, from like, my dad was born in 1943. This is like from the 1950s. I'm like, it is all metal. It's all electric. It's awesome. I don't know if it's worth anything, but it's, you know, it's got a huge sentimental value attached to it for me. But
is it still like in reasonably good shape? Like not okay. Yeah. Wow. I mean,
it's in super fantastic condition. The tracks, it all works well. I mean, because I'm like looking at like the little boxes and I had to connect all the little like connector pieces, and you know, nowadays it's all battery operated, electric, you know, and not electric, and it's all this like really, it's plastic stuff. I mean, we had one that for many years that my son put together downstairs, so we have a few Christmas trees. We have a small Christmas tree in the basement, and we have the one up here in the living room that I'm looking at right now as we record. And It's something about it. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I don't know if it's a collector's thing, but again, it's a total sentimental value to me. And my dad collected so much stuff when he was a kid for his train set. And I'm just so happy I could be able to have it out and share it with my son and daughter.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Doing that stuff. And it's a real funny story is that we knew a winter storm was coming in, and Chris and I, with my leg, I can't get up and string lights, because I'm not going to damage myself any more than I've already done.
Yeah.
But we're out there and we're putting up Christmas decorations and putting up the inflatables and putting stuff where we can. Literally, we finished 25 minutes before the first snowfall came down, and we got everything up and tested, and the lights worked. So we were cutting it close.
And this didn't turn into like a scene from like Christmas Vacation, right? Where you just put all this stuff up and you're trying to get the power started.
Yeah, no, Margo, no. Why is the floor wet, Margo? Or not? I don't know, Margo. Why is the stereo broken? But yeah, we already watched that movie, so we'll probably watch it one last time because that's my wife's favorite movie of the season to watch. And
oh wow! Yeah.
We'll be doing my film shortly. We were going to be watching It's a Wonderful Life. Got to do that. I watch it at least twice a season. So, but yeah, we'll be making a trip. We're going to be making an uber quick trip down to Illinois to see some family and celebrate Christmas and a few birthdays the week before Christmas. So when Christmas time hits, we're not leaving the house. Dude, next time I'm in town, we have got to get together for a pint or a scotch or two, man. Seriously.
Yeah, I know. Well, I still would love to do like the, we talked about it a couple times, but like try to do like a reunion episode with like, from like Severpod and everything and try to get together and do that too.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I know you guys did the Halloween episode recently talking about the new film, and I really wanted to participate in that, but my schedule was like just taken up, and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that would be great, man. I would love to do that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, it's still on the docket. I know I was talking to Mark a little while ago about that. And we'll have to get something on the books to do a reunion episode of some sort. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot. Other than that, we're ready to go. So that's basically all I've got going on right now, man. It's quite a bit, but I'm looking forward to Christmas. It's coming up too fast, in my opinion. I mean, it seems as soon as like the summer ended, it was bang. It was Halloween was right there. Then Thanksgiving even faster. Now even Christmas. I'm like, I just want a couple of days to let the soak it all in and just kind of like mellow, kind of like absorb it instead of just like kind of, I don't want to say going through the motions, but like, we have to do this. But, your schedule dictates everything, especially, in this day and age where you just are going. And then it's like, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like what the hell happened? So anyway, do you have anything else you'd like to add, buddy?
Well, I would like to add that today's episode is a very special occasion because we have to announce the triumphant return of the What Have We Watched segments, because we haven't done one of these in a long time, although the reasons for that are understandable for us,
yes,
at least.
honestly, it's been dormant since our Season 4 premiere and Episode 29, That Other Halves episode.
Yeah, and yeah, to remind everybody, though I'm sure fans already know, but in case we have new fans, yes. We try to squeeze this segment in as best as possible, depending on how many movies were reviewing, because if we're reviewing three movies, that's like three main courses. We can't just shove in the appetizer to help out, which is basically what the What Have We Watched segment,
Yes.
But
we were so good at the beginning
doing that. Right. But now that we are talking about just one movie, we have one main course, we can actually introduce to you an appetizer for this. So what do you think, Tim? You think we should go ahead and delve right in, or?
Well, yes, but first, why don't we pause for our first Speakeasy Network commercial podcast break? We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Dave.
Okay.
What?
What do you mean, what? Why do you sound slutty?
I was trying something new. You didn't like it?
No. No, I did not. Did you think it sounded good?
And this is Dave.
Oh, boy. We're from Sequel This, a show where we attempt to write sequels to some of your favorite movies, such as Ghostbusters 3, Goonies 2, and Gremlins 3.
Well, you can check out all of our shows over at sequelthis.podbean.com. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, all the major pod places.
And if you can't find an episode that interests you, or you have a great suggestion, or a pitch yourself, we want to hear it from you. So please, email us at sequelthis@gmail.com and drop us a line.
And remember to flesh it out.
What's wrong with you?
Everything and nothing.
All right, well, we're back, Chris. But let's say we warm up the old boob tube for our What Have We Watched segment, a Kurt Russell double feature.
Yay!
I said start because I'm talking about a new motion picture I want to sell you. It's called Used Cars, and it has stars galore.
Let's go.
Stars coming out of the woodwork. And just look at these stars.
The hell are you using here, Manuel? Water-based paint?
Sure. We don't get much rain around here.
Trust me. It's got everything this picture has. Color, sound, people moving around the works. It's a comedy with a lot of options. You want spectacle? We got spectacle. You want love interest? We got it. There goes another satisfied customer now. And that's what I call a bargain.
Promise me you'll keep my mercenary brother from getting his hands on this lot.
If I could buy him out, do you think I'd go to all the trouble to try to have him put away?
Now, look at this scene.
Now, I found these two guys. See, these two electronics whiz kids. They know how to jam a football game, sneak a commercial, right?
Are we sure we can pull this off?
If I can build and install a pacemaker in this man's chest, well, I damn well can bounce a microwave off a satellite.
And trust me, Rita.
You want the solution to inflation? Hi, friends. Is this a 1977 Mercedes 450 SL for $24,000? That's too high! Here comes another one!
Can you add this whole thing up? Taking into account inflation, rate, insurance savings, gas savings, ease, and comfort, you're going to come out $10,000 ahead after making this deal. Well, the rest of these alone of owning a Buick Centurion convertible can't be measured in terms of dollars and cents, am I right?
Used car! Come on down, buy a ticket, and see how she handles. I got $500 right here. I don't care if you laugh all the way through it. I don't even care if you walk out when it's over. I don't want you to buy this movie. I just want you to come on down and look at it. So let's talk turkey. Gobble, gobble, have I got a deal for you. Trust me.
Trust me.
Trust me.
Trust me.
Trust us. Used car. Friends, it may be just a movie to you, but it means a lot to me.
Dear Santa, this is Kate Pierce. I've been really good this year. I do say bad words every now and then, but that's only when my brother Teddy makes fun of me and I lose my... I mean my temper. Let go, you're gonna break it!
Who cares? This camera's like 20 years old.
I have to work.
It's Christmas Eve.
You're gonna stay home with your sister.
We should make a video. Maybe we could get a shot of Santa Claus.
You really have no clue, do you?
Nobody's ever seen
Santa Claus!
Tell me you're getting this. Do you realize how big of a deal this is? We need to get a closer look.
Are you crazy? Duck!
Can he see us?
I don't think so.
Hop, Cupid! Hop, Comet! Hop! Ah! Hold on to something!
Santa Claus?
Live and in person. One night only.
Can you go ho, ho, ho?
I don't go ho, ho, ho. That's a myth. Christmas spirit's down 35%.
Half the planet's not going to get toys.
So if you brats don't get presents, it's not the end of the world.
People need Christmas to remind themselves of how good they can be.
Wendy, you got so big.
Excuse me?
You know what I mean. Grown up big. Now, Wendy, we need a ride.
Can you call an Uber?
You think I can pay the driver with these?
Imagine if we all work together.
This just might work. We need to rally the reindeer.
Comet? Me, Comet?
And find the elves.
I think I'm in the North Pole. The sleigh's busted. Can you guys fix it?
Maybe we can still save Christmas.
you're down! Show up!
Less than an hour before the sun rises.
Whoa.
Let's get this party started.
We have a Ram-Zapped auto.
Yeah, you just like wave your hand and Jedi mind trick the cop.
I'm Santa Claus, Teddy, not Yoda.
Okay, that's enough fun for one night.
Are you listening?
Comet, you can slow down!
Come back here!
Why must they keep drawing me like that? Does my butt really look that big to you?
Okay, Chris, why don't you take it away, buddy?
All right. Well, I am the movie that I just saw, or I'm going to be talking about, is Used Cars from 1980, directed by Robert Zemeckis and written by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale. Before they hit it big with Back to the Future and securing careers in Hollywood, writer-director Robert Zemeckis and co-writer Bob Gale were just two schmucks trying to make their way to the big time. Their first film, I Want to Hold Your Hand, from 1978, which was executive produced by Steven Spielberg, did well critically and was well-liked by preview audiences, but financially it just didn't do much business. During the scriptwriting phase of what would become the, suffice to say, the dire and just plain groan-inducing Spielberg comedy, quote-unquote, 1941. Producer John Milius expressed interest in making a comedy about a used car salesman in Las Vegas with the intent of having Spielberg direct it. Well, cooler heads prevailed, and the idea was pitched to Zemeckis and Gale instead. With Spielberg serving once again as executive producer with the production financed by Columbia Pictures, Zemeckis and Gale would develop the idea into what will become Used Cars. However, Columbia Pictures did very little in marketing to push Used Cars into wide release, and the film did marginal business at the box office. But home video and television screenings rescued Used Cars from falling into complete obscurity, going from a cult movie to a rediscovered comedy classic. And what a comedy it is! For Used Cars is such a loony movie that despite the crude and tasteless humor, it's all rather good-natured and quaint. If any, it's the type of wacky comedy that one wishes were brought back today, at least in this particular style. So what's Used Cars all about? Well, it's about two rival car dealerships. One is a dilapidated dump owned by the kindly Luke Fuchs, played by Jack Warden, while the other is a more classy lot owned by twin brother Roy L. Fuchs, also played by Jack Warden. Working for Luke is top salesman Rudy Russo, played by the great Kurt Russell, who is trying to pursue a career in politics via buying his way into the Senate. Luke agrees to help Rudy out in financing his political endeavors, provided that Rudy makes sure that brother Roy doesn't take over his car lot. Unbeknownst to Luke, twin brother Roy wants to take over Luke's car lot because a freeway will be built over Luke's dealership. Well, after poor Luke dies of a heart failure, Rudy intends to sell as many crappy used cars to finance his way into politics and make sure Roy doesn't know about the brother's death. Utilizing the help of fellow salesman Jeff, played by Garrett Graham, crazed mechanic Jim, played by Frank McRae, and two TV electronic wizards, Freddy, played by David L. Lander, and Eddie, played by Michael McKean, and a cute dog by the name of Toby, Rudy proceeds to keep business going and piss off Roy L. Fuchs in the process. But when Luke's long-lost daughter, Barbara Fuchs, played by Deborah Harmon, shows up, things start getting a little dicey for Rudy and his flea pit operation. You know, it's hard to believe that this movie got so little theatrical exposure back when it was new. And that's a shame, because had Columbia Pictures gave it just a bit more push, Used Cars could have been an instant hit, or at least I think so. But then, hindsight is 20/20, so who really knows? At any rate, I have to thank the esteemed Mark L. Risman of Sequel This for introducing me to this gem way back in the early 2000s, and it was everything that Mark said it was. Used Cars is over the top with its humor and manic energy, but at the same time it has a plot line that is focused and never veers off the tracks. And speaking about the over-the-top humor, Used Cars is just bonkers. There are too many funny scenes to mention, but there are two that I have to mention. The first is when Garrett Graham's character uses the pet dog Toby to
to pretend to play dead so as to make it look like a potential customer ran the poor pooch over and guilt-tripped the schlub to buy a car. The second is when the team decide to illegally interrupt the televised State of the Union address by the president by putting on a ridiculous commercial ad with one character shooting up and even dynamiting Evil Roy's car lot. Yes, you know, I know my descriptions aren't doing it that much justice, but you just gotta check it out and you'll understand. And yes, Kurt Russell is just so much fun as Rudy the used car salesman. Despite being his character being a con man and just plain despicable, the character is driven, and we root for him all the way. So, honestly, Used Cars is all in good fun, recommended, it's a comedy classic, and it has great replay value as well. Trust me. And that's all I got there, Tim, so how about you?
That sounds fantastic, man. I will have to watch it over our little break here from in December. Yeah. That sounds extremely funny. I've been a huge fan of Kurt Russell's for a while. I haven't seen that movie. I'm kicking myself. I haven't seen it sooner. But that's great, man. That's awesome.
So now, how about your side of the Kurt Russell double feature, Tim?
All right. So mine's a lot more recent, as it was just released November 22nd, 2018. It's a Netflix original film. It's called The Christmas Chronicles. It's currently sitting at an IMDb rating of 7.3 out of 10 stars. Directed by Clay Cadis, written by David Guggenheim and Matt Lieberman, starring Kurt Russell. The film opens with some Christmas music and a series of flashback family home videos at Christmas time throughout the years. We then get to present day, and we, the audience, learn that the family have lost their father, Doug, a firefighter played by Oliver Hudson. We see there is some strife within the family unit. Teddy, the older brother, played by Judah Lewis, is heading down a dangerous path as we see him boost a car with some friends for a joyride, leaving Kate, played by Darby Camp, his younger sister, to follow him and blackmail him with a video she took of him and his friend stealing the car. The struggling mother, Claire, played by Kimberly William Paisley, a nurse, tries to keep peace between the kids and the Christmas spirit alive, all the while working crazy hours at the hospital. Claire gets a call from the hospital saying she needs to come in because they are short-staffed and need help. She leaves, telling them both to act like brother and sister and get along. It's Christmas, for fuck's sakes, guys. No, she didn't really say that, but I'm assuming that's what's going through her head. So Kate decides she wants to catch Santa Claus, Kurt Russell, in the act after she views a home video and sees a flash room of an arm possibly belonging to old Saint Nick himself. She convinces Teddy, her brother, to help. It turns out her hunch was right, and they see him delivering presents. They find the reindeer and sled in an alley behind the house. Kate sneaks into the back of the sled, and Teddy follows her to make sure she doesn't get killed. So they stow away, and Santa takes off. What happens next is the adventure of a kid's lifetime. They accidentally scare Santa, played by Kurt Russell, as he almost collides with an airplane. The sled and reindeer break apart, and they fall out of the sky and land in Chicago. We, the audience, learn that Kate and Teddy are originally from Lowell, Massachusetts, so they're pretty far away from home. Now the kids and Santa must find the reindeer and Santa's lost sack of toys and make all his deliveries. They must do all of this before Christmas morning, or the Christmas spirit will plunge to zero, which would lead to catastrophic chaos of the most epic scale. Also adding another wrinkle added to the story is Santa Claus gets arrested by the Chicago Police Department for stealing a car and possible child endangerment and a slew of other charges. So now it's up to Teddy, or Kate and Teddy, to find the sack of toys and the reindeer, try to break Santa out of jail, all while getting kidnapped by a gang of bad guys. So this is – it's nuts. But
it sounds like total mayhem.
It's so much fun, and it's totally family-friendly. I mean, it's awesome. So do Kate, Teddy, and the elves, the reindeer, and Santa save Christmas? Well, boys and girls, you're going to have to tune in and find out. So in closing, this film is a family treat for young and old alike. In my humble opinion, it will go down to become a family Christmas classic in the same vein as a Santa Claus and Home Alone, only better. I mean, you've got car chases and great one-liners done no better than by Kurt Russell, who truly steals the show, in my humble opinion. Plus, a very special cameo that will remain a secret. I love this movie top to bottom. Two thumbs up. That's all I got, man.
Man... See, that's what's the beauty of Kurt Russell. It's like when he's in it, it seems like the movie is just gonna go right out the gate and it's gonna be great. So, does he still sort of have that leftover mustache from Bone Tomahawk and The Hateful Eight?
Sure, but it's grown into this nice white Christmas beard.
Yeah,
it is fantastic. There's a scene where he's where he's literally chained to like the desk in the police department. They're interrogating him, and the officer's like going, you know, he brings in a Coke with Santa on it, and that really ticks off Kurt Russell or Santa Claus. Just like Kurt Russell, but Santa Claus. He's like, you know, I'm getting tired of this. This is fake news. He's like, does my ass look that? Does my butt look that big? And he stands up and goes, no, I am not that big. He's just completely just having a ball with it. I mean, you know, honestly, the two Chicago cops played by Martin Roach as Officer Polvada and Lamar Morris, who plays Officer Jameson, they steal every scene they are given. You may recognize Lamar Morris. He is best known for his work in the Fox television series New Girl. He plays the character Winston Bishop, okay, who's also a California police officer. He's also in the movie Game Night as Kevin. The dude is absolutely hysterical. I mean, love Lamar Morris. He is so funny. Everybody in this film does a bang-up job. I mean, it's so much fun. So
I got to check it out, man, because I've seen the trailers for it and everything, and I was like, oh, okay, it's got Kurt Russell in it. I got to watch it. So.
Yeah. And this is another thing that may ring a few Christmas bells. Judah Lewis, he played Cole in the Netflix original film The Babysitter that we reviewed earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, right. So if you want to make it a double feature, see The Babysitter, listen to our that horror comedy episode 2, Laugh Harder, and then watch the Santa Chronicles. Yeah, the Christmas Chronicles. Oh, you guys are going to love it. I just recently read an article that when it was released, in this first week alone, it had 20 million viewers.
Yeah.
That is the largest opening for a Kurt Russell movie in one week. You know? So I threw two thumbs up. I mean, seriously, Chris, you're going to love it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I got to check it out, too. And you got to check out Used Cars as well.
All right, I'll make you a deal. I'll check out Used Cars. You check out the Christmas Chronicles, and we'll reconvene in our season 5 episode, and we'll briefly talk about both movies.
Well, if I got time, I'll do it, man.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna be off for a while. It's okay. You'll get some time.
But I mean, like you gotta. I mean, just the movie itself is so. It's just so ridiculous how it's all set up, and yet it's one of those comedies. I mean, I love Caddyshack, but if you like watch Caddyshack a couple times, you will discover that the plot line in Caddyshack is completely unfocused, and that's not a bad thing because I love the movie. But
right.
The plot line in Used Cars is extremely focused. It's
okay.
Extremely like there's no like you know like Caddyshack. Okay, here's the great thing about Caddyshack. It's called Caddyshack, but the movie doesn't take place at the Caddyshack. You're only there at the Caddyshack like in one scene or two scenes. And then the rest of it's just about Ted Knight and Rodney Dangerfield and Chevy Chase. And it was originally supposed to be about the kid, Danny Noonan, you know? And then it ended up, because when they made the movie, it kind of became, they kind of basically just put the script aside and just began improvising the story. But now, I mean, now again, I love the movie. I love Caddyshack. But again, watch that movie. It's so unfocused. But when you watch Used Cars, the plot line is so focused, and you know the comedy just keeps going. Because people think that an idea of a comedy is that it doesn't have to be focused. But in the case of Used Cars, it is a very focused comedy. It knows its goals, actually. So it knows its goals straightforward out the gate. So, but
no,
that's
awesome. I will definitely try to watch it.
Yeah.
Christmas break over the holiday season.
And trust me, too, you know the movie is funny, not just with Kurt Russell and Garrett Graham and Frank McRae and Jack Warden, but even the dog that they have in that movie, Toby, is, like, hysterical. The things they have that dog do in this movie,
it sounds morbid. Every time I see a dog in a movie or TV show that's really old, I'm like, boy, that dog is so dead right now. I know, it's awful to think, like, especially if the movie's, like, 25, 30 years old, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, that dog has been dead for, like, 15, 20 years.
But, I mean, this dog and this, because they make this dog do a bunch of stuff. There's another funny scene in the beginning where the old guy, the old car dealer is, like, working on this car, and he says to the dog, can you get me a Phillips screwdriver? And the dog literally goes and gets him a screwdriver. And he turns to the dog and goes, no, Toby, I said a Phillips.
That's a flathead.
But I mean, that's how funny it is that even the dog is well trained to do all these things, and the way how the characters talk to each other is great too. I mean, you know, there's a great scene where, again, I'm not trying to give it all away because you got to see it, but I just say I love how there's one part where Kurt Russell's character is talking to the evil brother next door who comes by and says, "I want to talk to my brother," and they're just swearing at each other like crazy, you know, like. And it's just ridiculous, but I love it. And like the situations, like when Kurt's trying to sell this car in the opening title sequence, he's like, the bumper falls off and he's chewing gum, so he takes the gum out and sticks underneath the bumper and uses it to hold that up. I mean, again, it sounds like I'm giving it all away, but I'm not. You just have to see it. It's like a live action cartoon. Is almost.
I will definitely make it a point to check it out. Yeah. Totally. So, but at this time, I think it's okay to. It's time to unwrap the main gift. But first, let's pause for our final speakeasy commercial break, and then we'll roll that trailer for Red Christmas from 2016. Back at you guys after this.
Hey guys, what are you doing?
Ah, sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove steaks up donkeys' asses.
Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about...
our junk!
Yeah, we're gonna do that.
You can find us at thedrunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Junk Drawer.
Hands in the oven, presents in 15 minutes. This year I thought before we opened presents, it would be nice if we went around and said what we're grateful for.
Perhaps Peter could lead us in a prayer.
This isn't a goddamn church.
And here I thought this would be so easy.
I know how hard it can be starting a family late in life.
You're on the clock, buddy.
Chris, why don't you take it away, bud?
You sure, man? I'd rather be talking about the two Kurt Russell movies.
Should we? Do you think it's you think the gift is a pile of coal, or do you think it's something, a delicious horror treat?
I think it's what Dave Rodriguez would refer to in the vernacular as hot garbage. But all right. Just brace yourselves, everybody. Brace yourselves. We're talking about the movie.
Strap in, guys.
Strap in. You know, we're talking about the movie Red Christmas from 2016, written and directed by Craig Anderson. Red Christmas opens with a montage of people holding placards and protesting on the issues for and or against abortion outside of an abortion clinic in Australia. While the protest is on, we see a nondescript man entering the hospital with a suitcase, which has a rosary hanging from the suitcase handle. Well, clearly this dude is up to no good, and sure enough, the suitcase explodes, causing a panic inside the clinic. However, the unknown bomber comes across a yellow-colored bucket with a biohazard label on it, and inside is the still-living body of an aborted baby. The stranger quickly takes the baby under his arms and proceeds to leave the place, ensuring the audience that this incident will lead up at some point the wacky horror mayhem that is to follow. Anyways, 20 years pass, and we are introduced to middle-aged widow Diane, played by Dee Wallace, who is preparing Christmas dinner with the help of her Down syndrome son Jerry, played by Gerald Oudwyer, young daughter Hope, played by Deela Merrill, and Uncle Joe, played by Geoff Morrell. Arriving in tow is daughter Susie, played by Sarah Bishop, and her husband Peter, played by David Collins, as well as daughter Ginny, played by Janice McGavin, and her husband Scott, played by Bjorn Stewart. Sadly, there is some tension present, as Diane intends to sell the house, send Jerry off to assisted living, and taking herself a long vacation of sorts to Europe, all the while Ginny objects to this whole decision. But that's not the only issue the family is facing, for they have an unexpected visitor on this Christmas day. A stranger by the name of Cletus, played by Sam Campbell, who speaks like the Elephant Man, has his face and hands all bandaged up, and is wearing a black hooded cloak. Nothing odd about this bloke, I suppose, considering earlier on he just killed a drunken Aussie farmer who decided to take a piss on Cletus because, well, the farmer is a drunken piece of shit, which is made even more clear by the fact that the farmer is drinking 40s and laughing maniacally. Seriously, that's deep character development, even for a day player. Anywho, Cletus proceeds to open a letter addressed to Mother and reads it to Diane, which in turn causes the mother to become very upset when Cletus mentions that abortion clinic bombing that happened 20 years ago. Needless to say, good old Uncle Joe throws Cletus out of the house, and the family continues to celebrate their holiday cheer. Except for Cletus, who decides the best way to get his message of peace and love to his family, or to this family, is by killing them one by bloody one. Joy to the world! So now it's up to dear old Mama Diane to help keep her family alive, as well as come to the terms over a horrible secret involving, yep, you guessed it, good old Cletus. Oh, and yes, Noel spelled backwards is Leon. Anyways, that's my synopsis for Christmas, a gift that I'm sure the audience wish they could give back. Yes, that's Red Christmas, folks. As you can tell by my so-called enthusiastic synopsis, I am really not enthusiastic about this movie.
If I'm lying, I'm dying.
I know. I mean, I could sit here and say to you, no, I'm absolutely kidding. This is a great movie. This is fantastic. It's got, believe me, I can't do it. Do it. I can't do it.
He can't do it with a straight face. He's not a politician.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or an actor.
Well, yeah. I mean, I may have the attitude of a used car salesman, but even this is just something I can't get away with. But, it's interesting because when we were doing our Thanksgiving episode, which, by the way, hopefully you listened to, you had mentioned this movie, and you said, you know, hey, it's got Dee Wallace in it. We all know her and love her from The Howling and E.T.
Critters, I believe.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, can't go wrong. And she executed
Cujo, yeah.
Yeah, Cujo, and she even produced this movie or was one of the producers. And there was another movie that we were considering, but we felt, you know, because you watched this other one, I forget what it was called, but
Mother Krampus, which is if it makes you feel any better, Mother Krampus was worse than this.
Really?
So
really?
It would have been a real tough row to hoe.
I don't know. I thought this movie made Blood Rage look visually polished by comparison to this movie, but you were talking about that, and you said, you know, maybe we can do both. But I think let's just do one.
Yeah.
And I did go in the Red Christmas kind of, and like you did as well, hoping that it would be, you know, a worthwhile movie, but as it turns out, it's anything but.
and as we were talking off air, Chris, I said that, you know, I didn't. All I know is I saw a pop up. I saw Dee Wallace. I'm like, oh, fantastic! I loved her in Critters and E.T. and The Hills Have Eyes. And you know, she's just a staple MILF of like the '80s for all of us kids growing up. I mean, you know, who didn't love her in E.T. as the mom? I'm like, she's fantastic, and she's even had like great guest starring roles on shows like such as Supernatural just recently. And I was really looking forward to it, but this is all on me. Okay.
No. I'm not trying to lay blame, but I mean,
for one, I really liked the poster. I saw Dee Wallace was attached to it. I saw she executive produced it. I read like the little, the very three sentences of the – or four sentences that was in the Internet Movie Database saying, oh, she's a mom and she's got to protect her family from some psychopath on Christmas Day. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a perfectly lighthearted, fair kind of like fun, stupid slasher movie.
So in other words, this was fun. So in other words, this is fun for the whole family is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. If it's the Manson family.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing, though. I think this story had some promise. It's just not very well executed. It feels like it's – and this is the thing. Being a critic reviewing movies, particularly these type of movies, you know, we can sit here and we can say, yeah, you know, the execution and, you know, maybe it could have been done better this way or that way. But, you know, and not try to take away from them trying to put whatever effort is into it. But it just felt like the whole thing felt very rushed. And I mean, in terms of its, you know, technical aspects, it felt rushed. And I felt like the story could have been maybe a little more than what they were going for. And one of the things that really threw me off quite a bit was I was trying to figure out if this movie was trying to be a horror comedy or if it was trying to play some elements straight or if it was just trying to be, you know, just ridiculously over the top. It felt like it really wasn't settling on what it was trying to be. You know what I'm saying? It felt like it was all over the place.
Yeah, I believe at one point they called it like a horror dark comedy, but I'm like, I've seen those before. I'm like, that is kind of really a tough sell for me, you know.
Yeah, some of those movies can work if they're pulled off well, and this is one of those movies that wasn't pulled off well to get away with that.
Right. Here's the thing: we've talked about dark horror comedy movies before. Like we mentioned Krampus. Krampus is a perfect example of a dark horror comedy, and that, you know, knows it's like it's path. This is just it. Just seems it's like a half baked cake. It's like it doesn't feel right. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. I don't know.
Well, and kind of go back to Krampus for a moment. The reason why that movie worked is because it could have gone. I think I mentioned this before when we reviewed it. It could have gone down the path of being a gross out, tasteless endeavor by the likes of Charlie Band and his company Full Moon Entertainment, you know, right. Where or even Troma. But instead, it went the other path, which was, yeah, it's a horror movie, but it's actually a little more lighthearted. It's not overtly gory. It's not. In other words, it kind of fits in the mold. It knows where it's going, and it didn't try being in your face with its right. with its concept. It was like, look, this is a movie about the legend of Krampus, and we're going to take it into a much more lighter-hearted territory. You know, we're not going to make it as completely gruesome or as dark. And like I said, it could have gone that road, but then it could have been extremely, you know, lame and tasteless. I mean, although not to necessarily. I mean, yes, there are some tasteless movies that we've talked about that we've actually enjoyed. Yeah, we've actually enjoyed. But I'm saying is some of those movies, when they're pulled off well, they work. When they're not pulled off well, they don't work. So it's
you don't say.
Yeah. So, and that's the case. What I was saying in comparing Red Christmas to like Krampus is like. Krampus actually has pulled off very well in terms of the direction it's going. Red Christmas feels like it's not sure where it wants to go, and it tries its best, and it fails miserably, and we walk away going, wow, what the hell happened? But, yeah it's but like I said, the movie feels also like a hard sell in one sense because of that. And, yeah, I mean, it's a disappointing movie, but, you know, we do have to talk about it because, you know, we have a show to do.
Right. So, for me, I really enjoyed Dee Wallace's performance as I think was in Claire, or no, Diane.
Diane, yeah, yeah. She did a pretty decent job considering.
She had the most meat. All the other characters were very one-note to me and very generic and completely and utterly forgettable. I mean,
everything about them. And you know what? And again, that's another, like, difficult aspect of trying to come up to do something like this, but trying to do something different, but it just feels like it's all the same. All the other characters are just very one-dimensional in terms of who they are. You've got the couple, Ginny and her husband, Scott. you know, she's pregnant, and she's also the sister that doesn't like what mom is doing with selling the house, and she's got a chip on her shoulder, and then you've got the other sister.
She's the artist.
Oh no, yeah. Who's basically the ditzy sister, you know, who thinks she's an artist. And then you've got the other sister, Susie, who's the quote unquote conservative type, and she's married to Peter,
preacher.
who's a preacher. Which I was trying to figure out what religious denomination was he? Was he Lutheran? Was he Protestant or Presbyterian? We never find out.
And he's dressed like a priest too. I mean,
yeah,
because most priests, or most, like, I just got back from church, actually. outside of the robes that they wear during the sermon or during church, they don't wear collars. At least none of my pastors.
Well, unless you're Catholic, and I've been to Catholic school, and, yeah. and by the way, and if you're a Catholic priest, you're certainly not married. But
right.
I that's what I was trying to figure out. And again, that was a missed opportunity. Again, a missed opportunity for the script is to at least, you know, have one of the characters, like the Uncle Joe character, who's like this sort of, like, who we believe is supposed to be like this post-hippie guy, mm-hmm. who's like enjoying smoking his, you know, medical marijuana or whatever. And you'd think there would be a scene where he's like trying to understand, you know, maybe quizzically asked Peter, you know, hey, you know, you're a priest, but, you know, I mean, you're, you know, how do you guys get to be married, and how does this group do anything to do, you know, like, really just have fun with that material. But instead, there's no attempt to do anything with that.
Right.
And then, you know, and then there's the Jerry character, who's got the Down syndrome, who I have to say,
for me, he was a bright spot too.
Yeah, he was a bright spot in this movie, because he actually, even though he plays the part well as with the Down syndrome, he doesn't come across as like what you would expect someone of having Down syndrome in one sense. That's what I'm trying to say.
They don't paint him as helpless or an idiot. Like, they paint the other characters.
And maybe that was intentional. I don't know, but it just felt, you know, again, it just feels like the script was very underdeveloped. Like, there was just no attempt to do anything else except, you know, yeah, let's make a slasher movie. Make sure you have those one-dimensional characters that we may or may not care about. And like I said, some of those ideas work depending on how you pull that off, but this, again, was not one of them.
Well, and here's the thing, is they throw in a blatant, like, almost like quasi like sex scene between the pregnant wife and the husband.
Yeah.
And then you got the priest or whatever acting like a pervert, you know, like peeking on him in the bathroom.
Well, he's
this is a family celebration at your mom's house. You can keep your hands off each other for having sex just for a few hours.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that's interesting too about that scene with Peter, because, you know, I think what they were trying to portray is that because he and his wife are like this, I guess you can say, dressed down conservative couple religious couple, yeah, because they don't have a kid, or they have chosen
they're
not.
They're trying,
but it's not quite working out. But, right. You know, he's watching this other couple have sex, and then he scuttles off into like a walk-in armoire or whatever, and he starts doing something inside that. We presume he's in there masturbating, basically. But you know, again, it's like one of those things where, you know, wow, that feels like there could have been something that could have happened with that, developed that character a little bit more. But no, we just, that's all we get. And it's like, and it just feels, again, it feels one note dimensional. Ah, he's a priest. He's sexually repressed, or they're not able to have a kid. It's like, okay, yeah, we've seen this before.
Yeah, I mean, and it's exactly what you do, because in the next scene they have him outside, the guy is chopping wood, and he's checking out, and the priest is checking out the guy's ass. I'm like,
oh yeah, that's the thing, though, too, and it's like, what are they trying to say? Are they trying to say that not only that, but he might have, like, homoerotic tendencies? I mean, or is he attracted to
dudes,
the dudes, or the dude's wife, because she comes up and says, you know, when they say when you're pregnant, you know, our breasts expand bigger or whatever it was.
Either way, it just comes off creepy and weird. And like you mentioned, repressed. I'm like, yeah, I remember that one scene. I'm like, and again, it goes nowhere. And maybe it shouldn't. I mean, and honestly, if it's not going to go anywhere, don't even have it in there to begin with. I mean, it totally doesn't even really fit.
Well, you know what, though? But then that's another catch-22 for it, because if you don't have anything in it, then the characters are just kind of there. And that's the thing, is that, like, you know, it's like all they have to do is just stand in the line if you don't give them anything to do and just point out, okay, this guy is going to die, this one's going to get killed this way, this one's going to get killed that way. But the problem is that this is an 80-minute movie, and it has to sustain itself somehow. And it really doesn't sustain itself somehow. So so let's kind of – real quick. So we have the big opening sequence. It's by the way
– the pulling, the oh, man, that's fucked up kind of like moment, you know?
Oh, wait. Which one was that? The
opening sequence. The 30 seconds of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And I got to tell you, it feels like the movie's got some promise right there, because, you know, you get you know, you've got the abortion clinic bombing, and then you see the guy look over the biohazard bucket, and like this baby's hand sticks out, and it's going to go somewhere. It's a little much, but I honestly thought it was actually going to go more of a supernatural direction, because it just, you know. But anyways.
Honestly, I think that would have been probably a better call.
Yeah, or if I can remember this, I'll point out something that I thought that they should have done besides this, but we'll get to it when we get to it. So then, of course, you know, the 20 years pass. We're introduced to Diane, played by Dee Wallace, who's getting Christmas dinner ready, and we're introduced to the varying characters that, at this point in the movie, we really don't really give a shit about, because they're just not very interesting. And basically, they're upset at the mother Ginny is upset at the mother because the mother's going to sell the house, because the husband passed away, I believe.
He died of, like, cancer.
Yes.
You know, brain cancer or something like that. So, yeah.
Right. And then, you know, all of us, and then we get to this moment in the movie where, as all this is going on, we're introduced to the character Cletus, played by Sam Campbell, underneath his bandages and black shawl and everything. I will admit, I did laugh during the scene where he kills the drunken Aussie farmer, because he just really. It was so ridiculous. Because what does he do? The dude pisses on him, and then he just reaches over and grabs the dude's... I mean, we have to presume that Cletus tore the dude's dick off, but, you know, we don't get to see... For a movie that's trying to be extremely tasteless, it you don't even get to see it. I'm not saying it would have been great. But what was that one Christmas movie we watched about the killer last year, about the killer that... was decapitating I'm forgetting it.
Was it all throughout the house?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. At least that movie.
Yeah,
at least that movie kind of, you know, went the extra mile. whether it was appropriate.
If you're going to go tasteless, go all the way or go home.
Go big or go home. Yeah. So then, of course, Cletus shows up at the house, and you know, he proceeds to read that letter to the Diane character, mentioning about the abortion clinic bombing, and then of course she begins to, you know, get upset over the whole thing, because, you know, because basically she's saying that you know, the whole thing about how, you know, how dare you bring up that, and how dare you bring up the issue of abortion on this day, blah blah blah. And obviously, at this point, we know that some hidden secret is lurking underneath the whole thing. Primarily because of the way how Dee Wallace just immediately reacts to the
thing. And what we come to find out later is that she lied to the family because her husband was going through chemotherapy and didn't know if he was going to live. And she made a decision to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. And she lied to her family telling them that she had a miscarriage.
Right. So I think it's no surprise at this point, even though it's like within the how many minutes this movie's in? 20 minutes? 25?
It's like an hour and 21 minutes, and an hour and 21 minutes too long.
But so I'm gonna guess about 20 minutes in, we kind of get the idea of who Cletus is. And again, folks, spoiler alert, sorry, but if you've been with us before, you know we do this.
Yeah. This is the fourth season.
Yes, yeah, this is the fourth season. If you have not figured it out yet, I don't know what else to tell you. But anyways, yeah, Cletus is apparently the long-lost aborted son of the Diane character. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up right away is because we pretty much have the idea of where the story's going to go now. Now it's going to become a vengeance story over that whole thing. And as I was saying earlier, I said, now, I think it would have been better had Dee Wallace's character been involved with the abortion clinic bombing, and that somehow, some way, that this character is getting revenge over the bombing rather than, you know, the long-lost son coming back to, massacre this family and out of rage and then reconnect with the mother. So that's what I'm saying, is like there were other directions this movie could have gone in and could have been a little better. I'm not necessarily saying my idea is fantastic, but it could have taken it into a much more interesting direction than say
more palatable direction.
right. Maybe a little more. I hate to use this word for it because again, it's how much you can get away with it. But maybe a little more thoughtful, because the concept of this is not. Let's not lie about this here. Let's not try to put up some funny facade. The reason why this movie was made is because somewhere along the line, they're trying to use the concept of abortion, whether you're pro or against it, as a political prop for this movie. And again, it could be an interesting concept, but the execution is just not very good.
Honestly, it's a muddled mess. It's muddled from the word go. I mean, it's
oh, absolutely. And so anyways, like I said, we've kind of given that away, but I'm sure if you heard my synopsis, it's kind of obvious that's where it's going. So anyways, but we do still have to talk about this movie. So anyways,
mentioned that before. Are you trying to psych yourself up like, we have to talk about this movie, we have to talk about this movie?
We do. We do, because we can't just like leave the audience and say, well, we just talked about it, forget it, you know, we won't get into the rest of the movie. No, we actually do have to point out at least some of the interesting aspects of the movie, as well as most of the terrible aspects of it. So come on, our intent of doing this show is being entertaining. What else can we do? So, if I had a kazoo and slide whistles, I could play in the background here for you, but I don't. So, so Cletus is thrown out by good old Uncle Joe, and Cletus is crying. Oh, I will say, I did laugh when, because do you remember when they gave him a gift?
The peanuts?
The peanuts, yeah. And then when he left, Dee Wallace runs out and throws it at him.
Knocks him right in the head.
I do admit I laughed at that part. I was like, okay, maybe they're on the right track with the comedy. Maybe.
Well, maybe, yeah. one silly part.
Yeah.
But the thing is, now those peanuts become a major player at the beginning, because why did she re-gift the peanuts to Cletus? It's because her stepdaughter is allergic to peanuts.
Yes.
And can't have them in the house.
Right.
So pay attention, boys and girls, because that comes back, very shortly.
Yeah. So anyways, so while Cletus is like crying over the whole thing, of course he feels the rage in order for him to prove his point, because he was trying to, in a way, when he read the letter, he was also trying to, you know, promote the concept of peace and love and everything, and as well as trying to reconnect with the family that he'd never had.
Yes.
But of course, by going the rage route, that basically means he has to kill everybody in the process. So, yeah, I know. It just evens itself out, doesn't it, folks? I mean, you know, it's like a two-tier thing, you know? So of course, you know, the family is like enjoying their day. You know, they're drinking shots at one point during the montage sequences in this. Oh, by the way, I want to talk about something real fast about this. Another thing about this movie that really doesn't work is the extremely awful camera work in this film. I mean, I'm not against handheld, but you need a steady hand for that. And a lot of the handheld shots in this just feel, again, giving this movie the implication that it's a rushed production, you know, where you have so many, you know, handheld shots, almost as if no one wanted to put the damn thing on a tripod. So the camera's just bobbing around so many times.
It felt very guerrilla-esque style.
Oh, yeah. And I have no problem with that, because, again, it works within what context you try to put it into. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, it just feels very... It just feels very sloppy and rushed. It's like, you know, it's almost like, we have no time. Just grab it and grab whatever shot you get. And those things do happen, but still, it's like, it just feels so rushed and, you know, haphazard and maybe even a little workmanlike, but not quite pulling it off as well. But so, yeah, that's what I was trying to add there. Anyways,
yeah, for me, the biggest thing was like the chemistry between the characters. There was like absolutely no chemistry between the family at all. I felt like everybody was just kind of standing around delivering lines. Like it's like I didn't feel that vibe. You know, you're supposed to feel.
It felt like all these characters should have been in different movies, and yet somehow they ended up in this movie. And it's like there's no connection with any one of them. There's nothing.
And
it's like
and here's the thing is when Cletus starts stalking around, you know. Killing the family. Now we're led to believe that Cletus has just come for the very first time to this house. He does not know the layout at all.
Somehow
he finds the electrical box, turns out all the power in the entire house.
Yeah,
the entire property. then he's such a ninja like that he knows the layout of the house and how to get in and get
interesting. It's interesting you mentioned that the way how he walks is almost like Hunchback of Notre Dame and yet he's somehow able to stealthily get into this house at one point and like you know like he's able to take that axe blade and kill the one character. Who was it again? Hope?
The stepsister, the artist.
Yeah, set that one up for us, Tim, because I think that one's very interesting.
This is one of the biggest things that really kind of like, it goes by feeling rushed. Okay, so they're having a dinner and they're drinking, right? And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, let's go out onto the porch and look at the sunset. Not even 10 seconds later, they cut to the next frame. Completely dark outside.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
sunset. Like,
hey, passage of time.
I get passage of time. That was like uber freaking. I mean, you blinked your eyeballs, and it was like, you know, gone.
I didn't realize it can get dark that fast.
Australia must be a crazy place to live. But anyway, so they're on the porch, and the stepsister Hope goes in to bring in like the bocce ball or whatever game they were playing out in the front yard, and she's walking around, and she walks upon the stump where they're cutting firewood, and she looks down and she sees the peanut shells or the peanuts all around her, and she's like, oh, like I go possibly I'm thinking going into some sort of anaphylactic shock.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see the axe blade or the axe come down on her, and then this is the most ridiculous part, is that it splits her completely perfectly in two, but they don't even show that. They just show the legs fall apart, and they pull out to a wide shot. It's like...
Yeah, it's one of those botched... What they just should have done, and again, I know why they did this in one sense. I mean, I don't know why, like, I know the story, but I have a feeling... I should say I have a feeling why they did
money.
This.
No money,
but also in their minds thinking, hey, wouldn't it be cool if the killer took that axe and just split her body in two like a piece of wood, and she falls over, and, you know, we don't have the body for it, but that's okay. We'll show the guts falling down. And the thing is, I'll give them a little bit of credit for doing it that way. But, again, is this movie trying to be a horror comedy, or is it trying to be serious? I mean, Frank Henenlotter, we did the same thing in Basket Case, but... It worked in Basket Case because it knew what it was.
That was clearly defined. You when you start to watch a movie or when you see the trailer and you're going down one path, and if you start sprinkling in too much of other thing, it gets muddled. You don't know. Am I supposed to take this seriously? Half seriously?
And then you mentioned clearly defined that machine that they build in Basket Case to cut the guy up. You know, it's ridiculous looking. So we know right then and there, okay, we know where the path is.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't.
I mean, and going back to either some of my favorite, you know, things that are completely just like crazy bananas, But again, well defined. The Hatchet movie franchises, even Victor Crowley, the sequel to the Hatchet franchise, we know where we're going with this. There's a clear defined path. You're supposed to laugh. It's supposed to be over the top gore. Grant, now they had a little bit more money. And I think Adam Green does a better job, you know, with writing and directing and producing.
They should have hired him for this. I got to tell you, he probably could have enlivened this movie up a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, getting back to what we were saying, I just.
Yeah, I know, folks. As you can tell, it's a tough slog for us, but hopefully we're providing you enough commentary on this movie. Yes.
So, Merry Christmas!
Yeah. Well, okay, so now basically the one girl, Hope, is dead, and the family finds him, panics, and then, of course, you know, what's their main objective? Run inside the house. Cletus turns the power off. Uncle Joe calls the police. I'll give this movie a little bit of credit here, because it actually does have a payoff in one sense. Unlike standard horror movies where someone tries to call the police and they can't get through because the line's been cut, or... Mm-hmm. Well, actually, in the oldie days when there were no cell phones, now there are cell phones, but...
Always no cell service.
Yes, no cell service, or if they're out in the woods, no signal, but Uncle Joe manages to call the police and get an answer... So they're waiting for the cops to show up, or
only they're very far out. They live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. A while. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the cop that does show up in this movie is just one. Okay.
I'm so glad you brought that. And here's the thing with me. Okay. For even just a domestic, not in a dispute, but like you call somebody to have because your music's too loud or whatever it is, they always send at least two fucking cops.
I know.
And he says my daughter has or my family member has been murdered. A young girl's been murdered. You send like two or three squad cars. If you get that kind of response, you get like almost the entire police force.
Dude, in Blood Feast. As dumb as those two detectives were, they at least had a couple of uniformed police officers with them. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay?
It was two detectives and two police officers. Much more, what's the word I'm looking for, realistic?
Well, or at least much more effective in terms of thinking to yourself, well, I hope these guys got backup. Oh, there's two guys over there. Hey, perfect. And by the way, the blue uniform cops and Blood Feast were local police officers, so that right. Even adds a little more hint of realism, even for that movie. Surprise, surprise. But anyway, so yeah, they call the police. They're going to send the police over or whatever. And of course, Uncle Joe, what did he decide to do? He's going to go out and get their car started or something?
I think he was going to go get the gun from the shed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Gun. Yeah. And I will give this part of the movie credit, too, because I thought in this scene, you know, Uncle Joe was going to, you know, basically, you know, bag it in this. You know, he was going to get killed. But it turns out, no, he doesn't, because when they're trying to call him. Oh, by the way, I love this. Again, here's the part where I'm like, okay, if they're going for comedy, it doesn't really quite work. Is when he decides to go outside and grab a flashlight. What kind of flashlight does this guy grab, Tim?
One of those crank ones, because the other ones don't work.
Yeah, what? Why would you grab a crank one? You have to, like, turn... I mean, those are fun novelty things, but, I mean, in a serious situation like this, just get a real one.
he had a real flashlight, but it wouldn't work, and then he grabbed one. I believe when he was searching through the drawer, he grabbed one, and he had another flashlight in there, and it wouldn't work, so he grabbed the crank one.
Yeah, so okay.
He goes out there, but again, and the characters, and look, we consider ourselves pretty knowledgeable when it comes to horror and slasher movies, and realize that, especially when it comes to certain slasher movies, most slasher movies, is that the characters don't make the best decisions, like, ever.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a slasher movie. But these characters go out of their way to make the dumbest decisions. I'm like, at one point, they all huddle into, like, this locked, like, shed where the gun is and where they have weapons, they have guns, there's only one way in and one way out through the door. It's locked, it's heavy. All they have to do is hunker down and wait for the police or wait for the cop. Now, granted, that doesn't make a great horror movie, but... They're there, and they're like, "Oh, we need to go back out and get the keys." Like, and there's cars, and there's like, "Well, we don't know about this." They're going back and forth. Like, it's like, goddamn, so dumb. I'm like,
yeah. It's like that goes back to the one-dimensional aspect of the characters and the script. I mean, yeah, it's true. Someone slash, and we talked about this before too. I mean, like, it is in a way the formula where the characters, you know, don't exactly make the wisest decisions, but then sometimes that formula is broken. I mean, you know. I don't recall the characters in, like, say, The Burning to be completely stupid. I mean, they, you know, the characters in that movie, and that was made in 81, you know, that right. was during the height of the slasher film, or during its beginning, you know, the characters in that weren't completely stupid. I mean, they at least in that movie tried to make them make, you know, reasonable decisions, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, with the information they're given at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, and to, maybe to be in fairness, that was back when the template of the slasher genre rules wasn't completely, you know, in sync yet. I mean, they were still doing other things with it before it became the standard. But, yeah, it's just the way how the characters are, again, we're ragging on it so much, but we have to, because it's just it's such a sticking point with us on this one, on this movie, is that the characters are just completely, you know, so unformed and so dumb that we just have to talk about
these them. these are somewhat halfway supposed to be somewhat halfway intelligent people, yet somehow this guy who not to take anything away from Down syndrome people, because they are smart, but you got 8 fully capable people. And it's dark. This guy's never been to the house before, and yet this guy's taking him out like he's a skilled assassin of some sort, you know?
Yeah, and it's like what we said, you know, this dude's walking like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, yeah. and yet he's able to, you know, stealthily get into this house and fool these people. And by the way, I don't think, even though it's dark, the house is dark in some parts, I think you'd still be able to make out during the slightly lighter parts inside the house that are lit, you know, this very bulky looking dude that's like crawling around the place. Right. But anyways, so Uncle Joe's outside, and like I said, I thought he was going to get killed in this part, but then it turns out the person that's calling him, which is the Scott character played by Bjorn Stewart, ends up getting an axe blade stuck in his head, which actually, and this is great too. So apparently our killer was able to split this first victim of the family in half.
Yeah, but somehow
only just drives the axe like halfway through in this dude's head.
and you know, and I'm so basically, because you know, doing for prep for the show, I'm reading all like the Internet Movie Database users reviews, and a few of them are extremely positive. So it makes me think that somebody that either worked on the movie or was related to somebody that worked on the movie was really giving like over the top glowing reviews, like 8 out of 10 stars, best horror slasher since, you know, Black Christmas, etc. You know, like
since Black Christmas. Are they mentioning the remake? Because if they're mentioning the remake, that was good movie.
I'm just using that as an example.
Oh, okay.
Not as a movie at Black Christmas, but best horror movie, you know, Christmas horror movie in a long time, you know, blah blah blah, like just going out of the way to be over the top, like joyful about this movie, like saying it's such a great masterpiece of work. And I'm like, there's no way this is, yeah. You know, and one of them, even a couple of them said that, oh, it's got some really creative kills. I'm like, maybe if you've never ever in your entire world, in your life, never seen a horror movie, it's got some creative kills. This is standard by the books, you know,
maybe, you know, for its budget level. They're creative kills, but in terms of it being inventive, like for the genre, not really. I mean,
no.
You know, I know this is going to sound silly, but the kills in this movie are on the level of those in Blood Rage that we reviewed. Okay, and even that movie had some slightly extensive makeup work.
Yeah,
those kills in that movie were not creative in terms of the genre. They were just creative because of the budget level that they had.
Right.
Same as this movie. So it's not like on that level. But anyways,
yeah, there the only one creative kill that I thought was halfway, or not one creative kill. The only kill that I thought was creative enough was when the priest bit it with, or the reverend.
Yeah, yeah. Actually,
with the food processor.
Right, right. So before we get to that, so anyways. Yeah. So,
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Because that was actually a pretty decent one, but we'll get to that one. But anyways, so now that, I'm forgetting his name now again. I'm sorry, folks. Oh, Scott is killed.
Yes.
Now, of course, the family manages to amscray out of the house into the garage and meet up with Joe, who finally gets the shotgun. Or
yes, that's what we're talking about with them being secured and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they decide to stay in the garage while good old Joe goes outside to get the car. And this scene actually wasn't badly, because I was like, I was a little surprised by it because Joe makes it to the car.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought
he actually turns it on.
Yeah, he turns it on, and the car is moving back. And I thought Joe actually succeeded in doing what he was doing, but no. It turns out we cut inside of the car. Joe is being strangled to death by the killer using the seatbelts, which was actually an okay death sequence. I mean, it wasn't over the top, but it was, you know, again for budget level, it actually kind of delivers. So, anyways, and then of course the. The car is driving out of control. It almost hits Peter. It does hit Peter, but he doesn't get killed. Yeah.
And we don't see it. We don't see it. We just hear it. We hear a thud.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know this is. I don't know if they did it to be intentional or not, but this is again with the exception of the peanut jar throwing scene where he hits Cletus in the head. This was kind of like another funny moment, intentional or not, was when you hear him pop up. He goes, "I'm okay. I'm hit, but I'm okay."
Yeah. And of course, it turns out that, you know, Uncle Joe is dead, and, you know, now, and then, of course, the police then finally show up.
Oh, no, but here, can we talk about this? So, there are, so the son, I forget what his name, the kid with the Down syndrome, is it
Jerry.
Jerry runs out there, and his mom's looking at Uncle Joe, or her brother, and she's saying how sorry she is. I'm like, the car could be somewhat drivable.
Yeah, this I was going
to
say
get the
car
fuck out of the place, you know.
Right, right. Away.
But no, they're like, "Let's go back inside the house," and we'll, you know. And I'm like, "No, leave now."
And then of course the police show up, and like I said, there's one guy, and then what happens is
they drop a bear trap on it.
Oh yeah, yeah, because they had like these bear traps on the side of the wall outside, used as like they hang them, and I guess they had them locked. But our killer Cletus takes it and then uses it to throw on top of the cop, which actually wasn't a bad effect shot because when it clamps on his head, we get like a gusher of blood shooting out from the side of his neck. So I mean, that one was actually pretty decent, you know, for the budget level that they had. So
yeah, for the budget level, but I'm like, again, I kind of seen it before, and
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I couldn't buy Cletus picking up bear traps are fucking heavy.
Yeah,
they're a lot, and for him to fling it like it was a frisbee or whatever, drop it like it was a, you know, whatever, next to nothing. I'm like, I'm sorry. There's only so much a suspension of disbelief I could possibly give a movie.
Yeah,
and
well, this movie apparently exists in its own world, and unfortunately, we're not a part of it. So so then of course the family once again runs back inside the house, and as the body count, I'm sorry, you're going to say something? What?
No. Uncle Joe turns on the power. Yet, the only lights that are on in the entire fucking house are Christmas lights. And
yes, that's right. That's right.
And that drove me up the wall. I'm like, for me, as a rational, I'm turning on all the lights, every single light I have in the house on. You know, I don't, you know, having the Christmas lights on, it just made me feel kind of like, I don't know, it's like a sick and disgusting and like very amateurist like thing to do.
Yeah.
From a lighting standpoint, but anyway.
Yeah, it felt like they were trying to do the Dario Argento thing, but but Dario was the master at it on his own levels, and these guys were sort of like kind of stuck in film school 101. So
I mean I get lighting for effect and for to convey tone and to convey suspense, but this it's a visual fucking eyesore.
Yeah, and so as the mayhem and body counts rise, there's a part in the movie where, like we talked about earlier, Diane confesses to Peter, confesses to him, you know, priest, see, folks, I made a joke there. Come on, everybody, get into it. Anyways.
I got that reference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but not too subtle, that is, in the movie. So so she confesses the whole thing to him about how she, you know, because of what was happening to her husband, and she decided to abort the child. And that, you know, to kind of figure out that this is who this person is. So, and then there's a part in the movie where the killer gets Peter, and like you mentioned, there's the scene where this part wasn't really bad because Peter, you know, thinks he's about to get killed, and then he gets on his hands and knees and starts saying the Lord's Prayer, and then all of a sudden Cletus starts repeating it, and then Peter kind of like is using this moment in a way to sort of subdue the killer so that way he can reach the knife right mm-hmm. on the ground, which was actually not a bad scene. I thought it was actually played out decently, considering yeah. all things considered.
Yeah, and he ends up stabbing the guy.
Yeah,
multiple times.
I gotta say, David Collins wasn't bad in this movie as the Peter character, simply because even though he's not given much to do, I kind of felt like he, along with Dee Wallace, were like really the two performers committed in this movie to do something with the limited material that they had, you know. Yeah. But anyways, so of course Peter tries to stab Cletus, or actually he does stab him, but then they turn on that what's that machine again?
That food processor.
Food processing, yeah. And then Cletus shoves Peter's head against it, and then all of a sudden you see the blood gushing in Peter's eyes, which was actually an okay effect. It was pretty decent.
That would probably be my, if I had to choose, be unique.
Yeah.
There I go.
Well, unique. I mean, it felt like that was the one that delivered, I would say, the most. So
I think that's what they spent their money on.
Yeah, yeah. But so then, of course, you know, again, at that time when that scene was going on, Jerry overheard the whole thing because, you know, Peter was telling Cletus, you know, about what happened that right. he learned from Diane. So of course Jerry confronts his mom about the whole thing, you know, because she said that the kid also had Down syndrome. So, you know,
right.
but then there's a moment in this movie where Diane accidentally shoots Jerry, which I gotta say, for a movie where everybody gets gory deaths, Jerry's death sequence seems very, very light compared to the fact that he just got shot with a shotgun.
Right.
In this movie.
And here's the thing: he's the only one I kind of felt halfway bad for.
Yeah, yeah. So and, I guess you can say, in a way, that worked out for him in terms of being a very light-hearted death sequence.
But I could see it coming a mile away, especially when Jerry and Cletus had that kind of like standoff like around the Christmas tree. I knew something was going to happen where he was definitely. They were going to pull like some switcheroo,
yeah.
and that's what happened.
Well, and then there's also, while that's going on, we have the two daughters
locked up in the bedroom.
Yeah, yeah. Ginny, who's about to give birth to her kid because she's pregnant, and then Susie, who's trying to help out.
Right.
And then, of course, Susie decides to run downstairs and try to, to put an end to this whole thing. But Tim, why don't you take it away and tell us how she gets it?
Probably the dumbest way to go. and then an umbrella in the eye socket, and then it opens up like a penguin, like a Joker.
God
penguin,
damn it!
like a Batman Joker or penguin thing, where like the thing, I'm like, what? No way would that even work.
Yeah, it's and again, it's interesting how we're criticizing the logic behind this movie, which is none. But like I said before, I mean, like, had this been done effectively in another movie, we would not be criticizing the illogicalness of this whole thing. But it's just so badly done. I mean, you know.
Oh, and I have to mention, because we didn't mention this before, there's a scene before Jerry dies, and it's where they're looking out the window. Everyone's huddled in the bedroom. There are two rooms, right?
Yeah.
And the doors are locked, and Dee Wallace's character looks out the window and she sees Cletus climbing up the trellis.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes.
And she goes down. She's like, "You lock the windows and stay away from the window." I'm like, "You're locking the windows." Okay, this guy is so much of a ninja, yet he's climbing like a snail up the trellis. And she has time to run downstairs, try to find a crowbar or something, and try to pry off the trellis. She never succeeds at prying off the trellis. She even goes and grabs some sort of like anchor of some sort.
Yeah, and not only that, but why would you, if you see him making his way up,
move the people out of the room?
Yeah, or why don't you just move the furniture over against the window?
Yeah. Or hey, he's climbing up the window. Lock the door. You know, again, this all gets down.
Folks, this is so by the numbers. It's even insulting to call this movie by the numbers. I mean,
yes. Genie is pregnant, and the other one's helping. But Cletus, the way he's scaling this, like, you know, so slow, they could really just get to another room of the house.
Yeah,
and lock the fucking door. No windows. Lock the door. Mm-hmm. You know, The guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Making my head hurt.
I was going to say, just criticizing the illogical logic of this movie gives us a headache. But anyways, and we are very close to the ending. So anyways, so.
Thank God.
Oh, I know, yeah. I mean, we're kind of all over the place with the order of this movie, so we apologize. But at the same time,
stupid shit you forgot that you saw.
I know.
Like, it's got to be mentioned.
If you think about it, the movie's so unmemorable, but the parts we just talked about are practically the parts that we remember, and it's the dumbest stuff. So, anyways,
this is why the current internet movie database user rating is 4.4 out of 10 stars.
So, anyways, so eventually, yes, Ginny gives birth to her kid, and she decides to, I believe she hides inside a giant stuffed bear, or she tries to hide in one.
Yeah,
she does, because when Cletus finally enters in the room, there's like the stuffings all over the place.
Yeah,
because
he starts attacking the bear. So yeah.
As much as Cletus is kind of like when he talks, he sounds like the Elephant Man. The fact that you would think he was stupid to not understand that there's stuffing on the floor and that he can hear your own baby that's been born crying inside the bear with you. Because then he figures out immediately where she is. She's in the stuffed bear. She's in this big stuffed bear.
Right.
And he proceeds to stab her inside of it. What does Cletus do? He stabs inside the stuffed bear and kills her, and then takes the baby out. You know, the baby's crying inside there. I mean, Jesus Christ. This movie.
It's so bizarre.
It's everything we were not hoping for, believe it or not.
So Cletus, you know, and then D-Wallace comes running in with the anchor.
Yeah, with that anchor okay. She's got.
Yeah. Okay, can we also make mention of that the fact that these guys, they had a shotgun. They shot at Cletus. They hit him. They stabbed him. D-Wallace, I think at one point, didn't she have a handgun at one point?
Yeah, she did, but she was firing it over the air on that one shot.
This is awful. I mean, even the guy was hitting the shoulder by the priest with the shotgun. I'm sorry we're skipping around because I just remembered it now.
Yeah, but like I said, we don't remember.
Yeah.
This is all the memorable stuff we remember. So.
How? Go on.
Well, okay, but then, and then we do, actually, I should mention real fast, we do finally get to see a good look at Cletus at one point in the movie. He takes off some of his bandages, and he looks like this deformed thing with giant teeth, and he looks like he really should be an alien, you know, in this thing, you know?
Yeah, I'd say a cross between, like the Jason makeup from the first Friday the 13th movie, and maybe, like, yeah, the old Goonies, the character of
Sloth.
Yeah, yeah. So a half breed between those two guys.
Yeah, and unfortunately, not one of the better characters that we're getting here. So
it's only for like a couple of seconds.
Yeah, and the makeup was okay. It wasn't that memorable. So I'm glad we only saw a couple seconds of it. But
right.
But anyway, so like you said, D-Wallace runs in with that anchor and then proceeds to stab the poor guy with it, and then. And the logistics in the sequence got really out of whack because at one point she stabs him with it.
Right.
He pushes her out the window.
Yeah.
Somehow manages to get her neck stuck on the chain to hang herself.
Yeah.
But we don't quite see that. We just see her fall out the window, and all of a sudden they. And by the way, one of the most obvious looking dummies I've ever seen in the movie of this type quickly fall and then hangs her. We don't even get a reaction shot of her head. We just get the wide shot. And then, all of a sudden, through odd camera framing, because of her being hanged outside the window, the chain which is connected to the anchor cuts right through somehow Cletus, and his body is split in half. And that's how he meets his horrible fate. Which I gotta say was very confusing. I actually had to rewind that back like 3 times to kind of understand how they did that.
And here's the thing: when it comes to movies like this, I've watched this movie twice.
I did too.
Once because I know I didn't like it, but I was like, you know what? Maybe I was tired. Maybe it'll spark some sort of something I didn't see before. Maybe I'll like it better. The second time I watched it, I hated it even more. It was.
Yeah, and then so we'll wrap up the ending with this. So basically, everybody is dead. Clearly a night of total horror for everybody, mm-hmm. including the audience that has to endure this film.
The baby lives.
The baby lives. And we get this shot of the baby laying on the bed, and then it fades out, and we sit here at the end, and we sit here going, so what about the baby?
Yeah. It's not like, okay, even going back to Blood Rage, at least you heard, like, the sirens or any other movie. You hear more cops coming, something, you know, to allude to, I don't know, anything. This movie was just... Ugh, I wanted to really like it because I really like Dee Wallace, but I can't in good conscience like even recommend this to anybody to watch like on any level. Like I'm like,
I guess we could recommend this to our worst enemies. I mean, but besides that, I don't think we have any worst enemies that recommend this movie to.
I mean, so basically, I'm doing like a quick scroll of Internet Movie Database right now, and I'm like looking gross U.S. box office. $2,255 on October 19th.
Now wait a minute, did this play theaters? I don't think it did.
It may have played a very, very limited, but it was $2,225. $2,255.
I don't know. Those figures are kind of strange. Those figures are kind of strange. So, I mean, I'll take its word for it, but it seems kind of strange.
Even for this. I'm just reporting for what Internet Movie Database is pretty reliable when it comes to those kinds of things. Not like, you know, opinion pieces, but...
Well, some trivia they're pretty good with as well, so.
Oh, it was... that's
movie. Yeah, as you can tell, this movie was the pits. It pretty much made me... This was, as Tim said, you know, the coal in our stocking. It tells us... I wish that when we get these movies, that we review these movies... like this for the holiday, that somehow a message could be given to us, told, this is the reason why you reviewed this movie. This is the reason why it's the coal in your stocking. This is what you got to do better with. But I don't know.
I don't know either, man. It's just like, I have nothing left to kind of say about this movie.
Me neither. Like... I think, honestly, like I said, I think we would have been so much better if we had just skipped over this and stuck with talking about used cars and the Christmas Chronicles.
Used cars and the Christmas Chronicles. There you go.
Yeah, which, by the way, hey, two movies that we do recommend over this one. So
extremely highly recommend. You know, honestly, if you really want to be the curious little kitten, it's on Netflix. I don't know for how long, but it's there.
We should have gotten Dave to be in this. He would have probably hated us.
Not 2 months in a row. We love Dave. We can't have...
I think he would have... Yeah, you're right. He probably would have hated us even more for it.
What the fuck is this shit?
It's like, all right, seriously, guys, come on. I can't do this all the time.
I'll see you guys in November.
He'll be like, no, this time, guys, don't call me at all. I'll call you when I feel like it, but not for this one.
Don't call me, I'll call you.
Which means never. Anyways, but yeah, there's not much else I can say about this movie.
So, you know, final review, I give it a definite thumbs down.
Mine's not just down, it's like all the way past the earth, you know? it's like
the molten lava.
It's molten lava, yeah. I feel bad saying that for Dee Wallace again, but, you know.
And I love her. I love her. And she's actually gone on and done other movies past this, and television shows, which are much, much better. I just feel bad for everybody involved.
Maybe it was the ambition behind it. Who knows? I don't know the story behind making it, but I can only assume that there was some ambition behind this, and then maybe it didn't turn out the way it was that they thought it was, or maybe it did, I don't know, but it just, I mean, like I said, it's, doing movies like these, it's kind of a toss-up, it depends on which way it goes, you know, but like I said, it's, I'm willing to bet somewhere along the line everybody had high hopes for it, and it kind of just fizzled out, and that happens, you know, I mean, I won't go out. I mean, as awful as it was, if Craig Anderson can come back with something that's much better, then, you know, hey, there's life after Red Christmas after all. You know, I mean, it's think about it. It's true. I mean, you know, I mean, if you really want to continue forward and do better, you know, the opportunity's there. I mean, hey, it's better to do that than to go down the Ed Wood route and basically go on to the next project and not try on the next project and then not try on the next project.
Basically just set up camp just to make cruddy movies.
Yeah. And then not have a successful career at all. I mean, I don't know what his intentions are. I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to do something better, you know, the opportunity is still always there. So like I said, so I mean, hope, and you know, like I said, as terrible as this movie is, who knows? But anyways, yeah, it's nothing else I can say about this movie except it's giving me a headache, and I had to take 2 aspirin already. It's not working. So I guess that's all I got to say about Red Christmas. I'm sure you've said your piece, and I've said mine, and you know, that's hopefully next year we can find a Christmas movie that will satiate us as opposed to this one.
Yes, I've already done some preliminary research, and I think I found a couple of ones that we may actually, I don't know, kind of like.
Hopefully. If not, then we're going to have to put Christmas episodes on the back burner.
Yeah, we'll just skip Christmas and go to something else.
But before we go, I was going to say that is really kind of hard in a way, is to take holiday themes and turn them into horror movies. And sometimes you get a successful one, like we talked about with Krampus, but then most of them just end up being, others that just end up being like, you know, really gaudy, you know, awful movies like Black Christmas, the remake. Not the original one. I love the original one, but the remake.
Well, you know what? Why stop there? Let's do Arbor Day, a horror movie about Arbor Day, or, you know, Flag Day.
How about a horror movie on the 4th of July? Do any movies of that exist? I know there's a movie called Uncle Sam by Bill Lustig, but I don't...
One-off
4th of July episodes.
But I've got nothing else left to say, Chris. Nothing for you, sir?
Yeah, I think that's it, man. We've exhausted ourselves over this awful movie, and hopefully we have fulfilled our mission to save the audience, our fans out there, from sitting through this movie, because we did. So, so that's all I got, man.
All right. So in closing, thank you to our longtime listeners, fans, and friends, and also to our new ones that may have just found THSP. This season, we've had our ups and downs, be it podcast or personal. Our season was a little bit shorter this year, but I believe we worked out most of the kinks and are moving in the right direction. And we will be back stronger than ever for our 5th season starting in January. I'd also like to thank our dear friends who helped contribute this past year. Mark Risman, who filled in as a guest co-host for our Guilty Pleasure episode. And for our special guests this year, Chris Burris for his help on our Saw franchise episode. That was a lot of fun. And Dave Rodriguez for totally giving it his all, as per usual, on our Thanksgiving special episode. You guys were all fantastic. And lastly, but certainly not least, my co-host, Chris. It's been fun and always a pleasure. Let's keep rocking in 2019.
Yeah, man, I am hoping 2019 is going to be just better than this year. You know, yes, always.
On many different levels.
Right. So, but until then, folks, thanks for listening, and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we wish you a Merry Christmas, the happiest of holidays, and a Happy New Year. Please be safe. We'll catch you all on the flip flop. For Chris Koenig, I'm Tim Kasta. Thanks again for listening to THSP. Have a great night.
Hey guys, well that's the end of the episode. We hope you enjoyed listening to us as much as we did recording it. If you subscribe to us through iTunes, please leave us a note and a rating. Your feedback helps shape our show. If you would like to email us with questions, comments, or even a possible show idea, or just to say howdy, you can by emailing us at thathorseshowpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook. Just type in That Horse Show Podcast in the search bar, and we'll pop right up. Make sure to also find and like the Speakeasy Podcast Network's official Facebook page as well. That way you can keep up to date with all the network's great podcasts. We are also on the Twitter machine at THSP at That Horror Show 1. So be sure to stalk us there. Follow us there, and we'll follow you right back. Finally, I'm on Instagram at Tim at That Horror Show Podcast. So we'll see you around, and take care.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown 4-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house.
You're goofy.
Don't piss me off, Art.
Clark, it's over.
Not according to Santa's watch, it isn't.
Now, come on, son.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Clark, I think it's best if everyone just goes home before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to That Horror Show Podcast.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year.